When John White, appointed by Sir Walter Raleigh as governor of the Roanoke colony in the New Americas, returned to England for more supplies in late 1587, he left behind his wife, his daughter, and his infant granddaughter, Virginia Dare, the firstborn child of the New World to English parents, among other settlers.
Upon White's return in 1590, he found no trace of his family or any of the other inhabitants of the abandoned colony. Over the centuries to come, archaeologists, historians, and explorers would delve into the mystery of the lost colony of Roanoke, all failing to find definitive answers.
This is a really, really good one this week. This is one of those things that have really intrigued me.
And literally, I don't know anything about it apart from it was an American Horror Story. And to be honest with you, the American Horror Story bored me. So I stopped watching it because I feel like it was that one where like half the series was done as if it was like a TV show. And then half the one was if it was like them making the TV show.
Yeah, so there is like an American Horror Story season that's like really loosely based around this. Which is a shame because I feel like if they had properly based it around it, it could have been really good. But they just didn't. They did it really strangely, which was odd.
Because so Ryan Murphy ruined it. Just say it. Ryan Murphy ruined it.
Yeah, he did.
So, he knows how to start things really well, but then he finishes them awfully.
And then he can't finish. Yeah.
Like, everything I've ever watched with Ryan Murphy has always started so well. Like, the first two seasons of anything, it's like, yes, come on, Ryan, you're doing well here. But then it's like, oh, I kind of want to do this, but I don't know what to do.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I know. It's annoying because some stuff's, like, so good, and then it just doesn't finish the way you want it to. However, the assassination of Gianni Versace was very good.
Yes, with Darren Criss.
Yeah, but that was just like a one-off series, wasn't it?
His one-off series, like Feud, was very good. You see, Feud.
Yeah. Oh, and like OJ Simpson versus the People. That's very good. That's a one-off series.
Because he's good at doing one. Like, he's good at doing the first or second series.
This has been our TED Talk
on Ryan Murphy. Thank you very much for coming.
Thanks for coming.
Any questions?
So if you haven't guessed, this week, episode 13 of Curiously Morbid with me, Danielle Waldron, and my co-host,
Dean Osgood.
We are going to be talking about the disappearance of the entire colony of Roanoke and the mystery that still lies around it today.
Where did they go?
Where the hedge did they go?
Let's get down to business.
Let's do it.
In 1578, Queen Elizabeth I granted a charter to Sir Humphrey Gilbert to explore and colonise territories unclaimed by Christian kingdoms. The terms of the charter were vague, though Gilbert understood it to give him the rights to all territory in the New World north of Spanish Florida. Following Gilbert's death in 1583, the Queen divided the charter between his brother, Adrian Gilbert, and his half-brother, Walter Raleigh. Raleigh's charter, issued on March 25th, 1584, specified that he needed to establish a colony by 1591, or lose his right to colonisation. He was to lose his right to colonisation? That's like,
maybe, yeah.
This gift card expires by 2021.
Yeah, you are not allowed to colonise any more people.
But he was to discover, search, find out and view such remote, heathen and barbarous lands. What's the word? Did I say that right?
Barbarous, yeah, barbarous. Means
yes,
like
Queen.
The barbarians, because obviously they were like really racist. And anyone who just wasn't like the English people were like barbaric.
Yes. So to have, to hold, to occupy and enjoy, that was the quote. It was expected that Raleigh would establish a base from which he could send privateers on raids against the treasured fleets of Spain.
Just to give a little bit of context, basically at the time, America was like a brand new kind of land. I mean, they discovered it like 100 years before, but obviously America's so big, it took a really long time to get it all like up and running the way they wanted to. And basically you had like Spain and France and the UK, all these different places going in and like colonizing certain parts of it. And obviously that's when we see like the slave trade coming in into play and stuff like that in the years following.
Is that why sorry, so this is me, really bad history, and you're like the history expert. So is that why like in Mexico they speak Spanish and in Canada they speak French?
Yes, yeah, because that was all these like colonies and stuff, because like they sort of divvied it up amongst themselves. And that's why if you look on like a world map, all the states, it literally looks like they've been drawn with a ruler, doesn't it? They're like dead straight lines. And it's because they literally were, like, they were just divvied up. They were like, right, you can have that square, you can have that square, you can have that square. And it's the same with Africa. If you look on a world map, it's like straight lines, and it's because they literally ruled it off with a ruler.
Madness. Every day is a school day.
Every day is a school day, I know, it's crazy. So that was basically they're colonizing America and going and creating land, and the Spanish had a really good hold on this. Like you said, they'd gone to Mexico, Haiti, Jamaica, places like that. They had a lot of Florida at the time, and they were really getting a lot of goods and like mining for gold and things like that. And so obviously the rest of the world was like, well, hang on a minute, we want to also go over there and get a piece of that action. So that was why we started going over and getting colonies going.
I like that.
But so there you go, there's like,
I don't like the colonization. I don't
know. No, I don't
it.
Like the colonization either.
What I meant is I like how knowledgeable you are about history.
Oh, thanks.
Yes, great.
Despite the broad powers granted to Raleigh, he was forbidden to leave the Queen's side. Instead of personally leading the voyages to the Americas, he delegated these missions to his associates and oversaw the operations from London.
So he's got the cushy job?
Yeah.
Don't have
Pretty
to do
much.
The dirty work. Just tells them where
he's
to go.
He's just telling everyone else what to do. The British explorer Sir Walter Raleigh had established the very first English settlement there in 1585. So we had an English settlement, and then he returned to England the following year. And then it was in 1587 that Raleigh sent another group of men, women and children to settle that would later become Dare County in North Carolina. So that's what it is today.
You'd be a bit fuming, wouldn't you, if you were like the first ones, because there wouldn't be anything.
Oh my god, yeah. Have you ever watched Jamestown on Sky? That's basically like one of the first colonies, and it's so sad.
Like,
having to make
shop,
everything.
Do you know what I'd go lovely with this? Some butter. Okay, let's go churn.
Yeah, let's go churn it. Let's go churn it all.
Be arsed. Leave me here, please.
Oh, I know.
Maybe Roanoke Colony went to get butter. Maybe they nipped the shop.
You're not far off some of the theories there. So, but we'll get to that later. However, while Queen Elizabeth wanted to establish an English colony, growing unease between England and Spain put the expansion plan on hold. Because obviously we had like lots of wars with Spain at this time. This is like the Spanish Armada, all that sort of stuff going on. So it wasn't a great time to be trying to expand. So on January 7th, 1587, Raleigh approved a charter to found the city of Raleigh. And he chose a man named John White to serve as the colony's governor. And he had 12 assistants that joined him. Approximately 115 people agreed to join the colony, including White's pregnant daughter, Eleanor, and her husband, Ananias Dare. What a name. Hey, there's my drag name.
That is your drag name. Please, welcome
That's
to the
my
stage.
Drag name.
Ananias
Dare. That's such a fun name. I love it.
That's my drag name.
That is my drag name. I've done it. I've made it. Exciting.
So, throwback to if you listen to our Heaven's Gate pod. Danielle has revealed her drag name.
Oh yes. And if you haven't listened to that, go and listen. So, the colonists were largely middle-class Londoners, perhaps seeking to become landed gentry. Because you've got to think, why would people, like you were saying, how annoying being the first people, you've got to build everything. So, put yourself in their shoes. Why would you go do this? So if you're middle class at the time, if you're going over and building this place, you're going to probably get to own some land, a lot of land, and, you know, again, get it named after yourself and things like that. So many, like, last names, surnames are towns in America, because, like, little towns, because, like, there's a town called Waldron, so there was probably a settler from England over there called something Waldron, and then that's why there's a town just called Waldron.
I imagine it'd be like, do you remember on T4 on a Sunday, Shipwrecked?
Oh, yeah, yeah, just like that.
And you just put on an island and you had to build everything. I imagine yeah. It'd be like that. Shipwrecked, for our American listeners, is basically Survivor.
Yeah, pretty much, but not as intense. I don't feel like it's as intense as Survivor.
Oh, no, no, it was a cross between Survivor and Love Island.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. Pretty much. In the colony that was established by Raleigh in 1585, there had been two men called Manteo and Tuay, and they had left that colony with the fleet. But this time they were brought along again because they had that experience of, like, setting up a new place, basically, even though it hadn't been very successful the first time. And this party, obviously, was including women and children, but no organised military force. So they weren't really in as good of a position as what they should have been, because the reason a military force should have been there is because, obviously, there were Native Americans living there, and they wouldn't be too happy about people, like, literally moving them out of where they lived. And they were, you know, they did obviously defend themselves. So it was quite risky to go without a military force, really. They had a lot of men, but taking a lot of women and children on to establish a community was quite rare. So it wasn't the best idea. The expedition consisted of three ships. The flagship Lion, captained by White himself, with Fernandez as the master and pilot, along with a flyboat, which was under the command of someone called Edward Spicer, and a full-rigged pinnace, don't ask me what that is, commanded by Edward Stafford, and this fleet departed on the 8th of May.
So on July 22nd, the flagship and the pinnace anchored at the Croatian island. White planned to take 40 men aboard the Pinnacle to Roanoke, where he would consult with the 15 men stationed there by Grenville, continuing to Chesapeake Bay. Once he boarded the pinnace, however, a gentleman on the flagship, Representative Fernandez, ordered the sailors to leave the colonists on Roanoke. The following morning, White's party located the site of Lane's colony. The fort had been dismantled. While the houses stood vacant and overgrown with melons, there was no sign that Grenville's Mel had been there, except for human bones. White believed were remains of one of them killed by Native Americans.
Yeah, so that's that colony that was there just before them that tried to settle. So can you imagine getting off the boat, about to start your new life, and you're like, oh, well, you know what? They already built a couple of, like, little houses and stuff, so we'll go there and check it out. And then there's, like, bones.
And they've been dead a while if the houses are now growing melons.
Like, yeah, like, pretty much they've been dead, like, the whole time.
It takes a while to grow a melon. And also, it takes, like, 3 years to get from America to England in this time, does it not? It's like pure time.
It's a little bit shorter than that. It does take, when he goes back to England to get supplies for them, it took him a really long time because of the wars that were going on, so he couldn't get back.
He didn't want to go back. He was like, fuck this.
Yeah, probably. But also, there was loads of, like, warships in the sea, so he couldn't, like, chance basically, like, going through it. But we will get to all that. Following the arrival of the flyboat on July the 25th, all of the colonists disembarked. Shortly thereafter, colonist George Howe was killed by a native while searching alone for crabs. So, basically, it's not friendly.
No, nothing
about
this sounds
friendly.
Because
they're already getting killed off, and they've literally just got there.
And also, why would they expect it to be friendly if they're literally invading?
Yeah, this is what I mean. Like, it seems very strange that they went without any military protection when they knew what it was like, because they had that previous, like, go, which is really strange. So it's a bit odd, really.
Do they just imagine they could say to the Native Americans, like, we know you live here, but please can you leave? Imagine someone just rocking up to your house and being like, right, this is my house now.
Yeah, that's pretty much what they did. Pretty much.
And expect you to just be like, all right, then you take...
All right, yes. Okay.
I didn't want it.
Yeah, it's fine. It's totally fine. So yeah, it just really isn't okay. 1587, Eleanor Dare gave birth to a daughter, christened Virginia, in honor of being the first Christian born in Virginia, because that was what the place had been named already by previous settlers at that time, which obviously is Virginia now in America. So records indicate that Marjorie Hague gave birth shortly thereafter, although nothing else is known about her child. So we know that there were two babies in the colony at this time when they went missing, which is sad, because if they were babies, we don't know what happened to them. But we'll see. We'll see what the theories suggest. They might be fine. They might have lived happy lives. We don't know.
They might
have. So, yeah. So the colonists persuaded Governor White to return to England to explain that the colony was in a desperate situation and to ask for help because their supplies dwindled dramatically. White reluctantly agreed to this because they hadn't actually been there that long and he was already having to go back. This is only about a month after. So he departs on August the 27th, 1587. And bear in mind, he only set out on the voyage in the May, and now he's already going back to get supplies. So to me, that really suggests that they really didn't prepare very well for this.
It's like when you go on holiday or go and stay the night somewhere and you forget your phone charger.
Oh, the worst. That's
exactly
the worst.
What's happened here.
Yeah, that's exactly what's happened.
But obviously a bit more dire, like, oh, we've forgotten to pack the 2 year supply of food.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think it's because I don't think they realise like how much they had to do on their own. Like, obviously they'd have to provide all the food and, you know, like go and get that all sorted for themselves. And obviously the Native Americans, some of them would assimilate quite well and they would actually teach them, you know, how to fish and how to go and hunt their buffalo and things like that. Like the Native Americans, when you look into other tribes and how they helped other, you know, like settlers, they were actually pretty sound. Like, they were okay. It was us that were being the problem.
I never thought it was the Native Americans that weren't sound.
Oh, yeah, I know. But I just mean, like, they were really sound. Because if I was a Native American, I would have been like, I'm not helping you learn to fish. Do one, you know, and got off. But they were actually quite... Obviously, they probably were standoffish, but they did, in lots of cases, help them. You know, like, it's recorded in diaries and stuff that the Native Americans were actually quite friendly to them. And then it was the English that then decided, actually, we're going to kill you all off because you're not like us.
Is that Thanksgiving?
Yeah. Not great, is it?
That's a touchy subject in America, isn't it? Because
massively.
They celebrate Thanksgiving, but actually, wasn't it a massacre?
I'd have to do like proper research on that, but it wasn't great. And there was lots that went on even after like that whole like original Thanksgiving thing. The Americans that settled there then, and I don't want to upset anyone by saying stuff like this, but they went and like culled all the buffalo purposely because that was what the Native Americans like lived off of, basically. So they were starving them out. And then obviously they all had to be forced onto reservations. And even today, you know, indigenous people in America are massively marginalized and it's horrific. You know, it's really, really horrible.
It might be interesting for a future pod if we got like an American historian on or even some Native American people to come and talk about like their history.
Yeah, well, exactly, because that's what I mean. Like, I can read stuff on the internet, but I don't have that personal experience. Neither of us do we? So, but we just know it was wrong and it was just horrific. So it's difficult, really, to talk about. But so desperately, he returned to England, having left behind his wife, daughter, and newborn granddaughter in this Croatan territory. And Croatan is going to become quite important later to know that that's the territory they were in. And that was the name of the Native American, like, tribe where they were. It was their territory.
So they had named it that, the Native American?
Yeah, that was what their tribe was called. And we're going to look into that a little bit more in a minute. So little did White know he would never see or hear from any of his family members or any member of the colony ever again.
White returned to England with Fernandez, intending to bring more supplies back to his colony in 1588. Instead, the Anglo-Spanish War delayed his return to Roanoke until 1590. England, on the other hand, had found itself in the middle of the Anglo-Spanish War after an attack by the Spanish Armada. Consequently, Queen Elizabeth ordered that every English ship be used in the effort to get the Spanish, which prevented White from getting back to Roanoke and ultimately delayed his return to the colony by 3 years. That's a long time just to nip the shop for supplies.
That's a really long time. And to be fair, the colony probably were thinking, because it's crazy to think in that time, you would literally have no way of knowing, because you all these thoughts could go through your head. You could think the ship might have been wrecked and that's it, he's gone, he's dead. Or you could think he's decided to stay there, or maybe he went and on his way back he's come somewhere else and he you know, he's docked in the wrong place, he's in like the north of America, or you know, like he's gone to the south by accident or something like that. You wouldn't know. You just would
that's
not
if
know.
They lasted that long, mate. I don't think they lasted that long.
Well, yeah, that's well, yeah, we don't know.
Also, if their supplies did run out, 3 years is a long time to wait.
Well, that's the thing, yeah. So they would have had to do something anyway. And I'm sure he knew this and it was probably troubling him.
So the Roanoke governor had attempted several times to cross the Atlantic during the war, but was unsuccessful until he boarded a privateering expedition and convinced them to stop at the colony on its way to the Caribbean. When White finally returned to Roanoke, he was devastated to see nothing but a fence surrounding the village that should have been there.
Oh, can you imagine? You'd be devastated. His whole family are there.
And just rocking up and there just being a fence where you think there's going to be a whole village.
Yeah, that's insane, isn't it? Like, oh, because it's his wife, his daughter and his granddaughter and they're all gone.
So, it gets even more insane. So upon his arrival, he found the settlement fortified but abandoned. The word Croatian was found carved into the palisade, which White interpreted to mean that the colonists had relocated to the Croatian island before he could follow the lead. Rough seas and a lost anchor forced the rescue mission to return to England.
So it just seems like he's got no luck on his side.
So they think that Croatian word is them being like, oh, this is a no, this is where we
are. Yeah, this is where we've gone to their island. But the thing that sort of gets me is that the settlement has been fortified, so they've been trying to defend it.
By making a fence.
They've fortified it, haven't they? They've tried to protect themselves from what, you know, and why, you know, why did they do that? That would be ringing major alarm bells for me.
So it's obviously been happening over a long period of time for them to be able to make a fence.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they've known, like, there's some sort of a threat coming. Maybe there was rising tensions of some sort. So they thought, oh, we better do this just to be on the safe side.
Yeah, so the fate of approximately 112 to 121 colonists remains unknown to this very day. People speculated that they may have assimilated with nearby Native American communities, and these speculations appear as early as 1605.
Yeah, so that kind of seems to me, that seems like quite a gap though, like 1605, that's like 15 years.
Yeah, but I also think like,
it's a guesstimate.
At the time, or not a guesstimate, but they want to like. They obviously want more people to go and colonize other parts of the world, so they're going to try and make it sound more glamorous than it is. Do you know what I mean? Like they're not going to be like, all these people have been and got murdered.
They're
going to be like, that's like, do you know, like in school when something bad's happened and like you've got to try and keep calm for the kids, and you're like, no, it's just this, that's like a teacher trying to say no, they've just gone off and they've made friends and it's all good.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah,
so you'll be fine.
So investigations by the Jamestown colonists, and these Jamestown colonists were the next set, basically. So the set after the Roanoke were called Jamestown colonists, and they were called Jamestown because Queen Liz had died by this time and King James has ascended to the throne, so it's called Jamestown.
Is in the hot spot.
Yeah. So they produced reports that Roanoke settlers were massacred, as well as stories of people with European features in Native American villages, but no hard evidence was ever produced from this. Interest in the matter fell into decline around 1834, when George Bancroft published his account of events in A History of the United States. So this was something that was still really sort of on people's minds, or like, you know, it still is hundreds of years later. But even then, in like the sort of like 100 years afterwards, people were 100, 200 years afterwards, were still, you know, thinking about it and still trying to get these answers. Bancroft's description of the colonists, particularly White's infant granddaughter, Virginia Dare, cast them as foundational figures in American culture and captured the public imagination. Despite this renewed interest, modern research still hasn't produced any archaeological evidence necessary to solve the mystery. So, well, no, but you think if there was a massacre, maybe there'd be bodies buried or something like that?
No. If there's a massacre, they just throw the bodies in the sea.
Maybe, or possibly burnt them.
Yeah, so I don't think there's really any evidence. Because how now are we going to go? These people were massacred and killed, opposed to these people died naturally and were buried.
Yeah, and also, it's kind of telling that the investigations of the Jamestown colonists, because they had quite a lot to do with the Native Americans in their area as well, so I'm guessing their investigations just meant asking the Native Americans.
So, there were some guys here before us. Do you know what happened to them?
Yeah. And fun fact as well, Jamestown is the one that John Smith from Pocahontas was part of. Croatan was the name of both a barrier island to the south and the indigenous people who lived there. Carolina Alquagan speakers closely allied with the European newcomers. One of their young men, Manteo, had travelled twice to London and served as an essential guide, interpreter and diplomat for the English. So this shows that the Native Americans, the people that were there, they were helpful when they could be. And it was the same thing. Pocahontas did the same thing. She was also, you know, like kind of a buffer between the two like people, basically. And she did visits to the UK as well. White desperately wanted to reach Croatan and meet a mere 50 miles to the south, though he also mentions that the colonists originally intended to move 50 miles inland. So he kind of had to decide whether he wanted to go 50 miles south to see whether they were there, or whether he was going to go further inland, because they had been talking about that before he left.
Or just go both, because you could do 50 miles in a day. Like, come on, do both. Don't be lazy.
Back then.
Don't be lazy while you're picking.
Yes.
Yeah, you could walk 50 miles in a day if you're really tried.
If you were really tried. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So,
because I can walk 12 miles in 2 hours.
Oh, you go, girl.
No, I can't. In lockdown, I was going on massive walks listening to audiobooks, so that's how I know. So it would take, if you made it a whole day expedition, you could do 12, 2, carry the 1. 60 miles would take you 10 hours.
Yeah, and say you'd have like a little break every so often.
A break in for the 50. That's an hour. So it'd take you 10 hours. So, no choosing. Because it'd be 2 days inland and then 2 lands to the left or wherever it is walking.
Mm.
Like if you were that arse.
Without deep pockets to finance a transatlantic expedition on his own, White never returned to the New World. The 115 colonists, or possibly more, including Eleanor and Virginia Dare, White's daughter and infant grandchild, were all but forgotten and marooned on a distant shore.
I don't feel like he tried. I think he was there for a day or two. They might have gone off on like a hunting expedition and they might have just missed them.
Well, what if he just missed them? It's a bit...
Why are we saying that they are the vanished colony, when really they were just missing for the short period that he had managed to arrive there? And one, he didn't actually go looking for them. So, really, no. It's just him being a typical straight white man, being like, well, they're not where I left them. I best go back.
Yeah, but then when Jamestown settlers went, they still weren't there.
Yeah, because they were starving, mate. You can't live with melons alone.
Oh, yeah, but it was very clear that it had been deserted because there was nothing there anymore. Like, it had been, like, destroyed. It was literally just the fence, wasn't it?
50 miles inland, but he wouldn't know because he couldn't be arse walking.
Well, yeah, that's true. But apparently he didn't have the provisions, so I don't know what that means.
Didn't have the provisions? And I'll tell you what, I've watched Serious Desert. All you need is 2 Coke bottles. You wee in one, you bury it underground. And then it evaporates once. There's your water. You can walk 10 hours with a bit of water. Wee water.
Oh, gross. Well, anyway. 2 decades later, the English established their first permanent beachhead in the Americas. 100 miles to the north on the James River in what is now Virginia, Captain John Smith, the leader of the Jamestown colony, heard from the Native Americans that men wearing European clothes were living on the Carolina mainland west of Roanoke and the Croatoan Islands. Tales of mass slaughter and enslaved young maids circulated in London and Jamestown. Search parties were sent out. However, they never found any physical proof of the colonists' fate. So, basically, the Jamestown people, 15 years later, went and settled there. They heard these stories that a lot of them had been, like, mass slaughtered, and some of them had been, like, kept as slaves and things like that. And then they went and did, like, their own sort of investigations, looked for them, found nothing. But...
So no one can...
You've got to think, that baby is going to be, like, 18 by that point. Isn't she? She's not going to be a baby anymore. She'd be like a full-grown woman.
She'll be out drinking.
Yeah.
They're looking for a baby, but she's in a bar somewhere.
Exactly. Well, that's what I mean. And short, like, people had a lot shorter lifespans. So his wife had probably died. His daughter might have. Or she'd at least be, like, old, like, much older at that point. So.
But if he's still alive, mate.
No, but.
Imagine the wife would still be alive.
I don't know if he's alive, though, because it's Captain John Smith, wasn't it, that went... It wasn't white.
Pocahontas's
fella.
So no one can truly say what really happened to the colony of Roanoke, but theories run wild. It's probable that the settlers, facing a particularly bad drought, ran out of supplies, dispersed and assimilated into nearby tribes. The North Carolina forests were home to several Native American peoples, including the Powhatans and the Chowanokes, both of whom have been linked to the Roanoke survivors by way of trade fair. The Croatoans, however, did not take as kindly to the English men and women attempting to move onto their lands. If you look at it in this way, it is also possible that the Croatoans could have slaughtered the Roanoke settlers and disposed of their bodies, though some people believe that the people of Roanoke joined the Croatoan tribe. Oh, girl.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's possible, isn't it?
Yeah. I think that's a fab place to take a break. We'll meet back here in 5. Is this a good place for everyone to meet?
Yeah, this is a great place, yeah.
We'll meet you back here in 5. Danielle.
Yes, Dean.
3 words.
Go on.
Little box of happy.
That's 4 words, Dean.
Danielle.
Yes, Dean.
5 words.
Go on.
A little box of happy.
A little box of happy. They just so happen to be this episode's sponsor.
Yes, Queen. I love a little box of happy. It cheers my day up.
It's basically a little box just full of really cute little things that are just going to make you have that little burst of positivity. Just little things like mantras. They've got like little seeds in where you can grow plants. Pens, post-it notes. Just really cute little things that will just sort of cheer your day up. And just give you a nice little boost. Or a friend a nice little boost as well.
And do you know what? I was feeling so down. I was feeling really bad about myself. And I got a lovely little surprise for the post. My little box of happy came, and it really made my day.
Oh, I know. Well, it's just really nice. It really, again, it is a little box of happy. It just picks you right up and just has all the things in it that you need. It's just adorable.
So, Danny, where can I get a little box of happy?
So you can go to a little box of happy's Instagram, just simply at a little box of happy, all one word, and then you can go on there and DM them to get an order, or go to their Etsy page, which they're also called a little box of happy, and have a browse through their boxes. They do loads of different types. So if you want more ones with like face masks in, or like, you know, like positive mantras, you can get that one. Or if you want one that's got different types of teas in and highlighters and stuff like that, all really nice things for your well-being and stuff, you can pick that one instead. So there's three different
types. Yes, girl, I am sold. Take my money. That's a little box of happy on Instagram and Etsy. And be sure to tell them that the folks at Curiously Morbid Pub sent you. What's that smell?
Oh, that smell, Dean, is my blueberry muffin candle.
Oh, it smells gorgeous. Do you know, I've been sat in here all night, and like, it hasn't overpowered me, but it's just been like there, and I'm like, oh.
It smells like I've baked. It's beautiful.
It does. It smells like a sweet blueberry pie.
Oh, it's gorgeous. And do you know what? I also love their snow fairy scent and their lemon sherbet one. Again, like you said, they're not overwhelming, but they just smell so lovely and so sweet. So you might be wondering, where can you get yourselves one of these gorgeous, gorgeous wax melts? Because they are divine. You can go to Instagram at Lumi Candles and just go through, browse. They've got tons and tons of different scents to choose from. Wax melts, candles, the lot, they do it. And it is just absolutely lovely. And the scent lasts for so long. I've been using these wax melts now for about a week, and it's still as fresh as it was when I first did it.
And she's not lying. Like, literally, I've been in her house a few times this week, and every time it smelled absolutely delicious. Do you know what would make this even sweeter?
Oh, if there was a cheeky 15% off code.
Is there a little code for our listeners, Danny?
Oh, there's a little code for our listeners. So, if you put in Miss W15 at checkout, which is obviously for my Instagram, Miss Waldron. So, Miss W15 when you are checking out, or you can just DM it to them, they're pretty good like that. You will get 15% off your order, which is incredible because their products are already so reasonably priced. Like, for what you get, it's incredible. So 15% off as well is super generous.
Lumi Candles, code MissW15. Did everyone have a nice break? I'm glad we all got back here fine. We're just gonna go straight down to business. So thank you all. Oh, Sharon, turn your mobile off, please. That's so annoying.
So we're going to jump into the theories now, because obviously we don't have a definitive answer. So everything we're going to be talking about now is the theories. So based on some scant clues left behind, some speculated that Native Americans attacked and killed the English colonists. Croatan was the name of the island south of Roanoke, and it's now called Hatteras Island, which at the time was home to a Native American tribe of the same name. Alternatively, they might have tried to sail back to England on their own and been lost at sea, or being killed by hostile Spaniards who had came north from their own settlements in Florida, because of course at the time we were at war with Spain, so Spain wouldn't have been happy to find English settlers there. And Florida isn't actually that far from where Roanoke was.
No, and they didn't actually know about the war, did they? Because they had no contact with the Roanoke settlement.
Oh yeah, the Roanoke settlement wouldn't have known, no.
No, and they had like a little tiny boat they got left with the
Yeah, exactly. So one enduring theory was that settlers might have been absorbed into friendly Native American tribes, perhaps after moving further inland to what is now North Carolina.
North Carolina.
So, and that kind of matches up with some stories that the Jamestown people heard, that they then saw them, obviously, in these tribes. And we do know, obviously, that some of the Native American tribes and English settlers, they did sort of, like, you know, they had people that had flings and fell in love and all that sort of stuff. So,
they
you
fell
know,
in love.
They fell in love. So, two independent teams found archaeological remains suggesting that at least some Roanoke colonists might have survived and split into two groups, each of which assimilated itself into different Native American communities. One team was excavating a site near Cape Creek on Hatteras Island, around 50 miles southeast of the Roanoke Island settlement, while the other is based on the mainland, about 50 miles to the northwest of the Roanoke site. So that's interesting, because we know that they were planning on going about 50 miles inland, don't we? So that was one of the things that, like, a theory that's supported, because that's what they actually said to John White at the time, that they were going to do that. So that is quite interesting. In 1998, so really recently, archaeologists from East Carolina University stumbled upon a unique find from early British America, a 10-carat gold signet ring engraved with a lion or horse, believed to date the 16th century, so the correct time period that we're looking for. The ring's discovery prompted later excavations at the site, led by Mark Horton, who was an archaeologist with Britain's Bristol University. And he'd been directing this group of volunteers. So well done, people, volunteering.
You're doing the people's
work.
Yeah,
you are doing the good work. Well done. And they were doing these annual digs since 2009. They've been doing them there. So they are still looking for, you know, like, signs of this, like, the missing people.
What can be our thing for, like, when we like people?
So, recently, Horton's team found a small piece of slate that seems to have been used as a writing tablet and part of the hilt of an iron rapier, a light sword similar to those used in England in the late 16th century, along with other artifacts of European and Native American origin. The slate, a smaller version of a similar one found at Jamestown, bears the small letter M barely visible in one corner. It was found alongside a lead pencil. So they're finding a lot of these artifacts that basically sort of suggest that Europeans were there, where it was, you know, this Croatan town. So possibly that was a message to John White to say, oh, we've gone over to assimilate with this tribe.
Yeah, I'm showing my lack of history knowledge here. Would Native American people be able to read and write English? No.
Well, I wouldn't assume so. Maybe they I would assume that they had to learn it when, obviously, the English people went over there. So it depends if they'd already, you know, like, learned it or something. I don't know.
So is Croaton a Native American
word?
Yeah,
that's their word. That's how they would have spelt it. So they could have very, like, possibly engraved that. Yeah. That was their word.
So that Croaton is not like a translation?
No, that is like the actual what they called it. So, in addition to these intriguing objects, the Cape Creek site yielded an iron bar and a large copper ingot, which was basically a block, both found buried in layers of earth that appear to date to the late 1500s. So, the exact sort of time frame that we need. It makes sense. Native Americans lack such technology, so it's believed to be European in origin. Horton told National Geographic that some of the artifacts his team found were trade items, which basically means, like, if the Spanish or English people had gone there, they might have possibly traded those items with the Native Americans for whatever the Native Americans had to offer. So that could have been, like, sugar, gold, cotton, that sort of stuff. But it appears that others may have well belonged to the Roanoke colonists themselves. So it says, the evidence is that they assimilated with the Native Americans, but they kept their goods, so they sort of kept their ways as well. So they didn't fully assimilate because they you know, had things like a writing tablet and things like that, and like their swords.
Yeah, well, you take what you got, wouldn't you? You wouldn't want to give it all up.
Yeah, well, it just kind of showed. But also, the Native Americans probably thought, like, oh, okay, so that's how you use that to write on. All right, we'll give that a go.
A watercolour map drawn by none other than John White inspired the search at Sitex. That's what it was known as. Located at the Albemarle Sound near Edenton, North Carolina. Some 50 miles inland, known as La Vigarinha Pass. The map shows the east coast of the North America from Chesapeake Bay to Cape Lookout. It is housed in the British Museum as part of its permanent collection. White began drawing the map in 1585, 2 years before he became the governor. In 2012, researchers used X-rays and other imaging techniques to spot a tiny four-pointed star coloured red and blue, concealed under a patch of paper that White used to make corrections to his map. It is thought to mark the location of a site 50 miles inland, which White alluded to in the testimony given after the attempted return to the colony. If such a site did exist, the theory went it would have been a reasonable destination for the displaced Roanoke settlers.
So, come on, that theory is looking really likely now, because in this map, it's been, like, detected now by, like, you know, our technology of today. He had a little star that was basically pointing 50 miles inland, so that must have been a proper plan that they had.
So, he knew where they were, he just couldn't be asked doing the 50-mile walk, is what I'm saying. Lazy old straight white man.
But to be fair, we don't know what kind of condition he was in. Maybe he was like too like poorly, but I don't know. I feel like, why didn't they send someone over there sooner? Like, it seems like they thought, oh well, they've all gone missing, they've just been killed, and that was it. Like, they just sort of accepted that as what happened.
No, you telling me he's not the only fella on that ship? There'd be loads of them on the ship.
Yeah.
So someone could go and walk 50 miles. Do you know what? They could have even split up and said, you do that one,
I'll do this one. Yeah.
Did they learn nothing from Scooby-Doo?
I know. Let's split up for clues, guys.
So, according to archaeologist Nicholas Lucotti of the First Colony Foundation, which is conducting the excavations at Sitex, the group had found shards of pottery that they claim may have been used by Roanoke settlers after they left the colony. Located nearby in a site that archaeologists believe that might have been a small Native American town, Metequame. After the Roanoke colony met its end, English settlers eventually came from South Virginia into North Carolina. But the first recorded settler in the area did not arrive until 1655. But the recently undiscovered pottery is in a style called border ware, which is typical of the pottery dug up on the Roanoke Island, as well as at Jamestown, but was no longer imported to the New World after the early 17th century, when the Virginia Company dissolved.
Mm.
So, that's one theory. And this is where I'm leaning towards.
Is it?
Yeah, I like this theory. I think some of them died of natural causes. They realised help wasn't coming back.
Yeah.
So they might have gone off into two different groups and assimilated with the North American people. Because I imagine the North American people were quite kind, seeing that these people were struggling and being like, come on.
Yeah, like, come on then. And you've got to think a lot of the people that were left behind as well were the women and children. And so, you know, they probably did, like, hopefully they took pity on them. And, I mean, they had two babies as well with them, which, so hopefully... Yeah. They were sort of taken pity on.
But what were they going to do? Return to England? Like, they need, like, there was no other option but to take them in.
Some people have theorised that they did actually attempt to return to England.
No.
Yes. So it's thought that the colonists could have decided to rescue themselves by sailing for England in the pinnace that was left behind by the 1587 expedition. If such an effort was made, the ship could have been lost with all hands at sea, accounting for the absence of both the ship and any trace of the colonists. It's plausible that the colony included sailors that were qualified enough to attempt the return voyage. Little is known about the pinnace, but the ship of it But ships of its size were capable of making that trip, obviously, although they typically had to do it alongside other vessels for, like, support and provisions, things like that. So it wasn't very likely that it would actually make it the whole way on its own. Colonists may have feared that a standard route across the Atlantic Ocean with a stop in the Caribbean would risk a Spanish attack. Nevertheless, it was feasible for the colonists to attempt a direct course to England, so with no stops. In 1563, French settlers at the failed Charles Fort colony built a crude boat and successfully, albeit desperately, returned to Europe. Alternatively, the Roanoke colonists could have sailed north along the coast in the hopes of making contact with English fishing fleets in the Gulf of Maine. So that is something that I think probably would have been quite a good idea, really. So if they just was like, right, we'll sail north because there aren't any Spanish people up there, we'll just keep going north and hopefully we'll cross paths with some other English fishermen, people like that.
Because they would have done at some point, wouldn't they?
Do you know what? I think this actually makes a lot of sense because where's the boat? The boat was missing as well.
But also, it was 3 years. If the boat was just moored up, it might have just disintegrated. Well, obviously you don't think
I don't know, would it only take 3 years for a ship to rot and disintegrate? I don't know.
Do I look like a scientist?
That's what I mean. Like, I don't think 3 years is long enough for that to happen. I feel like at least some of them thought, jib this, and got off on the boat, but then just didn't make it.
Maybe that's why they split up into two groups.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Because that's definitely a possibility. There was over 100 of them. Just because, like, who says that all 100 of them were massacred or all 100 of them went inland? They could have easily split
well,
up.
It could be more one theory. What's interesting to note is that the pinnace wouldn't have been large enough to carry all of the colonists.
Yep.
So additionally, the provisions needed for a transatlantic voyage would further restrict the number of passengers. So obviously you're on a boat, you have to take everything with you. So colonists may have possessed the resources to construct another seaworthy vessel using local lumber and spare parts from the pinnace. Considering the ships were built by survivors of the 1609 Sea Venture shipwreck, it is at least possible that the lost colonists could produce a second ship that with the pinnace could transport the vast majority of their party. Even in these ideal conditions, however, it is at least some colonists would have remained in Virginia. Maybe Virginia would have remained in Virginia, leaving open the question of what became of them. So I feel like you know where that's coming. But do you know what I put a bit of weight to?
What?
That there was... So, I do feel like there might have been hostility from the Native American people.
Oh, okay.
Because, like, they've come in, they've taken the land. I'm leaning more towards there.
Yeah.
Is there anything that kind of backs that idea up?
Well, actually, Dean, there is. So, there was the Powhatan attack at Chesapeake Bay. So, I think as well, if they were hostile towards them, which apparently the Croatans were, according to White and his people.
Which you would be.
Yeah, understandable. If they were, they're now vulnerable, you know, because they haven't got, like, the extra people that were there with them. They haven't got the extra ship. So, you know, it is very likely, I think. So, it is also thought that maybe the 1587 colonists sought to relocate to their original destination of Chesapeake Bay, using the pinnace and other small boats to transport themselves and their belongings. A small group would have been stationed at Croatan to await White's return and direct him to the transplanted colony. Following White's failure to locate any of the colonists, the main body of the colonists would have quickly assimilated with the Chesapeakeans, while the lookouts on Croatan would have blended into the Croatan tribe, possibly. So again, it's that sort of idea of maybe, you know, that they'd split up and then they could have, you know, done different things and it might have not been a disappearance necessarily. And again, that kind of makes sense because if they thought, right, well, we've literally scrawled in the word Croatan, so obviously he'll come and look there because we've given him that sign. But then he didn't.
Well, we've told you. We've left a note.
Well, that's their equivalent of leaving a note.
But also, really, you could, like, Croatan, how many letters is that? You could maybe, like, put, we are at.
Yeah.
Like, six more letters.
We are at. Come to.
Yeah, come to. You could even write that in text message. Like,
yeah.
Or you,
the number
like,
two.
You like... See you at. So like an at. See you at.
Could you imagine that? That's so funny.
XOXOXOXO.
Oh, that's hilarious. It's also been suggested that Samuel Mace's 1602 voyage might have ventured into Chesapeake Bay and kidnapped Powhatans to bring back to England. From there, these abductees would have been able to communicate with Thomas Harriot and reveal that Europeans were living in their region. So this evidently made people believe that circumstances were necessary to explain optimism about their survival after 1603, because they'd had some Native Americans say that this is what had happened, that they had Europeans who were living with them.
So I'm kind of... I don't know, that's not selling that to me. Sorry, Danielle.
Yeah.
And I thought you could sell it, but you didn't.
Sauce.
But can I tell you about this conspiracy theory?
Go on, then.
So anthropologist Lee Miller proposed that Sir Francis Washingham, Simon Fernandez and Edward Stafford and others participated in a conspiracy to maroon the 1587 colonists at Roanoke. The purpose of this plot, she argued, was to undermine Walter Raleigh, whose activities supposedly interfered with the Wesleyan covert machinations to make England a Protestant world power, at the expense of the Spanish and other Catholic nations. This conspiracy would have prevented Raleigh and White from dispatching their relief. This conspiracy would have prevented Raleigh and White from dispatching their. This conspiracy would have prevented Raleigh and White from dispatching their relief mission until Washington's death in 1590. Miller also suggested that the colonists may have been separatists seeking refuge in America from religious persecution in England. Raleigh expressed sympathy for the separatists, while Wesleyan considered them a threat to be eliminated. According to Miller, the colonists split up, with a small group relocating to the Croatan, where the main body sought shelter with the Chowanoke. However, the colonists would quickly spread European diseases among their hosts, decimating the Chowanoke and thereby destabilising the balance of power in the region. Do you know what? I agree that that could have happened.
Yeah.
Because if you think, like, freshers flu, when all different students come together from different parts of the UK and they bring different illnesses. Freshers flu, is it like a real thing?
Yeah.
I remember every year at some point in September when I was in university, I would get ill for a couple of days. So from there, Miller reasoned that the Chowanokes were attacked, with the survivors taken captive by the Mandogue, a powerful nation to the west, which the Jamestown colonists only knew from vague accounts of their neighbours. She concluded that the Mandogue were the Eno, who traded the remaining lost colonists as slaves until they were dispersed throughout the region. So Miller's theory had been challenged based on Wasingham's considerable financial support of Raleigh's expeditions and the willingness of Fernandez to bring John White back to England instead of abandoning him with the other colonists.
Yeah, I think that kind of gives it a little bit of weight, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's a bit of evidence to back it up, to be honest.
Yeah, because you'd think he'd... I don't know, it kind of... I don't know, I feel like I'm all for shady people being shady. Because I know that it happens.
Be shady,
I know that sort of stuff happens, but then you've got to think, well, why was he giving them so much money then for these expeditions and stuff like that?
And also, I think people like to come up with these dead complex theories, but I reckon in actual reality, very simple things happen for these big mysteries.
Yeah. There's these huge so mysteries, which it will just have a really simple explanation, won't it?
I think the simple explanation for Roanoke is that half of them tried to go back to England and half of them assimilated with Native American groups.
Yeah, probably.
I think that is like the simplest explanation. That's probably what happened.
Yeah. Well, let's go and have a little look at some other theories. So we've got the secret operation at Beachland. So local legends in Dare County refer to an abandoned settlement called Beachland, located with what is now the Alligator River National Wildlife Refuge. The area has lots of reports of small coffins, some with Christian markings, encouraging speculation of a link to the lost colony. Based on these legends, engineer Philip McMullen and amateur archaeologist Fred Willard concluded that Walter Raleigh dispatched the 1587 colonists to harvest sassafras along the Alligator River. So all records suggesting that the colony's intended destination was Chesapeake Bay, and that England had lost contact with the colony, were supposedly falsified to conceal this operation from Spanish operatives and other potential competitors. So again, this is kind of similar to what Miller is saying, but obviously just slightly different. So according to McMullen, Raleigh quietly re-established contact with the colony by 1597, and his Saffra's expeditions were simply picking up the colonists' harvests. In this view, the colony was not truly abandoned until the secret of the colony's location died with Raleigh in 1618. After that point, McMullen argued that the colonists would have begun to assimilate with the Croatan at Beachland. So they're basically saying that these colonists were supposed to be left there to start to harvest like goods from America secretly without the Spanish knowing, and it was all like a big secret. But I'm not sure how much I believe this one, because why did they then send the Jamestown one in 1605? It doesn't make make sense, does it? It's a bit like,
and it doesn't make logistic sense. What are they harvesting? Like, is it going to last the big voyage back? Like,
exactly. It's kind of like, it's just, I don't know. This one just doesn't seem to hold much weight for me, and it doesn't have I don't know. Again, it's just a theory without many facts.
No,
backing it up.
I don't like it. Can we move on from it? Because I'm not buying it.
Yeah. Next theory is about the Cora tree. So why don't you tell us about this, Dean?
So I really like this one, and this is one that I think may have happened. So in 2006, writer Scott Dawson proposed that a southern live oak tree on the Hatteras Islands, which bears the faint inscription Cora in its bark, might be connected with the lost colony. The Cora tree had already been the subject of local legends, most notably a story of a witch named Cora that was popularised in 1989 in a book by Charles H. Weedby. Nevertheless, Dawson argued that the inscription might represent another message from the colonists, similar to the Croaton inscription at Roanoke. If so, Cora might indicate that the colonists left Croaton. Cora might indicate that the colonists left Croatoan. Croatoan?
Yeah.
What have we been saying?
We've been saying like Croatoan. Croaton. Okay. Croatian.
So, if so, Cora might indicate that the colonists left Croaton Island to settle with the Cori, also known as the Coronai, on the mainland, Leonate Matamuscut. But in 2009, a study to determine the age of the Cora tree was found inconclusive. Damage to the tree caused by lightning and decay has made it impossible to obtain a valid core sample of the tree. Because you know how they do it, they count the rings.
Yeah.
I love doing that on trees. But because of the lightning strikes, when lightning strikes a tree, it starts burning it from the inside, so that's why they can't do it. because trees. When I find it fascinating, sorry, sidebar. But when lightning strikes trees, they burn from the inside.
That's
out.
Crazy, isn't
so
it?
That's what's happened here.
Oh.
Yeah. So even if the tree dates back to the 16th century, establishing the age of the transcription would be literally impossible.
Yeah, that would be quite hard to do, I would imagine.
So I'm kind of buying it. I'm kind of buying it, and I do like it. But Danny, tell me about the dare stones.
Okay, so this one's quite a popular little theory as well. So from 1937 to 1941, there was a series of inscribed stones that were discovered and claimed to have been written by Eleanor Dare, the mother of Virginia Dare. They told the travellings of the colonists and their ultimate deaths. Most historians believe that they are a fraud, but there are some today who still believe that one of the stones may be genuine. The first one is sometimes regarded as different from the rest based on linguistic and chemical analysis and is possibly genuine. Another popular theory is that Spanish settlers in the Florida region massacred the people of Roanoke and destroyed the colony. This was war after all, and the race between the European nations to mark new land was nothing short of life or death. However, reports that the Spaniards couldn't even find the area until 1600 refute that possibility. Some suspect a hurricane may have struck the Roanoke colony because there was a some suspect that there was a hurricane that struck the Roanoke colony, although there was a lack of debris, and that theory doesn't explain why the fence was still left standing and how every other bit of the tiny village was gone. Which, that is crazy that every other bit of the village was gone bar this little fence.
Yeah, that's weird, isn't it? Why is the fence still there and nothing
else?
Yeah,
it's weird.
Did they literally just pick it up and move it, though? Because they do that in America, don't they? Like, just move houses.
Yeah, like, literally, just like, right, let's get it on wheels, let's go. So, the island of Roanoke is cherished for its fertile land and breathtaking flank of mountains around it to this day.
It's stunning.
But, you know, we've still got that mystery there of Roanoke and what happened to these colonists. So, Dean, what do you think happened?
Do you want me to get off the fence?
Go on, get right off that fence.
I think it's dead boring. I don't think it's a big mystery. I don't think it's a big conspiracy. I think they assimilated with... I think they assimilated with Native American groups. I think some of them might have not wanted to and fought against them, and then others did. I think there's probably fallen out.
Yeah.
I think they probably started going a bit crazy or a bit paranoid. Do you know, a bit like Piggy.
Oh,
piggy,
Lord of the Flies.
Piggy Island, Lord of the Flies. I could only name one character.
I was thinking Piggy. Where did my Piggy from?
Trying to draw it back. Yeah, a bit like Lord of the Flies.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah.
I like them split. That, and I think it kind of backs up with them splitting into two groups. I think they probably would have tried like calmed relations with the Native Americans. Maybe one group was really friendly with them and one group wasn't. I think it was probably something like that, but I don't think it was any of these grand conspiracies. I think a lot of them probably died naturally from starvation or from old age, and I think whoever was left was taken in by the Native American people because Queens.
I mean, for me, I think what gets me is there was obviously some sort of tension going on because they'd fortified it, and that wasn't done when John White left, and that fence was still up, you know, like afterwards. So it's obviously there was some sort of tension, and it probably was from the Native Americans.
That could have been before they made friends.
Well, yeah, but also you've got to remember that they did kill that person that was looking for crabs as well on, like, one of the first days that they were there. So they had already attacked them.
They were probably like, fuck, who is this?
Yeah, who the hell are you?
They come to kill me.
So they were known to do that. But, yeah, I'm sort of a similar opinion with you because I'm sort of a similar opinion with you, because I do think that there might have been some sort of a battle, and then some of them chose to assimilate, some of them chose not to. But I also think some of them probably tried to get off on a ship, and that and the ship went down somewhere, because we know that that ship, it was highly unlikely that that ship would have made the whole voyage on its own, when normally it needed other ones to accompany it. So I think there was multiple things. I think some people fucked off on the ship. Some people, you know, lost their lives fighting with the Native Americans because they were having none of it. And then some people assimilated. Like, I think it was a mix.
They all made their choices.
Yeah, I think it was a little mix of things that happened. But it does strike me as odd that John White didn't fight more to look for them. Especially because it's his whole family.
Because he was a lazy old white man.
Maybe. Or maybe one of those conspiracy theories are real and he knew exactly where his family were.
Mate, he couldn't be arsed walking 50 miles.
Because that is the only thing that gets me. Because it's his whole family. It's his whole family.
I know. And he probably had another family in England. So he was like, oh, thank fuck. No, I haven't got to do no splaining.
Maybe.
You know what the old straight white men are like?
Oh, yeah. We know.
Ah, that was really interesting.
This was a really interesting one. And it's one that I hope that they maybe partially kind of solve one day, because they are still doing archaeological digs, so there's still lots of stuff, you know, like, going on for this. There are still people who want to know what happened.
I don't think they'll find it out. I think it'd be a mystery forever.
Yeah, I think they're getting quite close, though, with the fact that they've found a lot of artifacts from that time that suggest that the Europeans were there. So to me, that sort of says the theory that some of them assimilated was true.
All right, I'll buy it.
Go on.
I'll buy it a little
bit. Go ahead, you'll have it.
I might bring it back. Danielle.
Yes, Dean.
So, Danielle, give me a little tease as what our Freaky Friday is this week.
Well, we're going back on our little ghostly sort of theme, but we're going to a very specific place. And it's this place where me and you probably feel most at home.
And we'll leave it as that. I like that. And then, however, next Monday on our main episode, we're doing something a little bit different.
Yeah.
We're going to look at a case that is closer to home for us. It happened in Liverpool and affects people we know, affects us.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit different to what we're normally doing. It is true crime, but we're doing it because we think it's important to tell the story.
Yeah, hugely important. It's massive, really, and it's still a problem, really, that's going on in England today and in America, and it's so tragic and just awful. So it is.
And it upsets me to talk about it, but we do need to talk about it.
Oh, yeah, definitely, because it's one of those things, like, there's just stuff to learn from it, and, you know, it really is harrowing, and it's something that shouldn't have happened. It was something that's preventable and didn't need to happen at all.
No. So next week, we're going to be looking at the story of Rhys Jones. Tune in on Monday to find that out.
But until then, until next time,
stay curious
and stay morbid. This has been an Audio Bear production. Our theme tune is Half Mystery by Kevin MacLeod.